Welcome in, everybody, to the Be Freaking Awesome podcast. I am the normal host, Joshua Belford. I am Angela's son. Angela is my mother and my permanent guest on this podcast.
Okay, so I have so many questions about that introduction because, number one, I'm like, ooh, we don't have Josh today. We have Joshua, and he's the normal host. Does that mean that, like, you're trying to classify yourself as normal, or does that mean, okay, sorry, getting into the words already.
I don't know.
You're just trying to welcome us in.
Well, you teased right before we started recording potentially another return of Sammy. So,
she's returning as a guest, though.
Yeah, but she has hosted before. So I don't know. Has. I don't know. I wasn't thinking about what I was saying. So, anyways, moving on to our classic question. This is a pretty good one, nice and short. If you could store only one type of food in your pocket, and whenever you pulled it out, you didn't have to worry about when you put your hand in your pocket, it getting all gross or anything, or when you're pulling it out, that it's just pocket size. I guess it can't be full size, but it's not going to be all gross. It's going to be exactly how you want it. You pull it out of your pocket. Basically, what type of food would you take around with you all the time?
This reminds me of the question of, like, if you could eat one food for the rest of your life, what would it be? And my answer for both this question and that question are pizza. I love pizza so much. It's not fun when I've spent the last couple of years trying to do low carb. So when I do low carb, I also, like, am very selective about how often I get my pizza. But I'm just imagining being able to take a yummy slice of pizza, roll it up into like a roll and put it in my pocket. And then, since this is the hypothetical imaginary situation, then when I pull it back out and if I roll it out and it's just perfect and it's not all goopy and gross, although, you know, we could maybe totally get something going on. Like, what if that rolled up pizza, like, imagine a Pizza Hut stuffed crust pizza rolled up and then you could just eat it like a roll. Okay. I may have just invented something totally new.
I'm not sure if you invented something new. There's a smaller version of that. It's called a pizza roll.
And that is not the same thing. Gross. Yeah.
They're so good.
No. Oh, we will have to agree to disagree.
Have you ever heard of the
bread is not right. The bread on the pizza roll. Like, it's like having an egg roll.
Have you ever heard of a papadilla?
Papadilla? No.
It's like, I haven't had one, but I'm 80% sure that it's literally just a pizza folded in half. And then it's like a quesadilla, but it's Papa John's makes it.
Oh.
And so it's like it's a pizza. So it's a papadilla.
Not a sponsor.
So the only reason I even know about it is because my friends who record podcasts, the Waste of Time podcast, they heard about it by some commercial or ad and just thought it was hilarious. And so now it's a whole thing. They even did a draft where they, like, drafted, like, the best movie props to replace when you replace them with a papadilla. So instead of it being exactly what it is, it's a papadilla and everything still happens. And so one of them drafted, like, the Death Star. So instead of it being a Death Star, it's a papadilla trying to shoot and blow up. That person didn't win because it's just too stupid, but replace a lightsaber with a papadilla.
I'm just curious, is it not a calzone? Like,
that's what I said.
Folded in half pizza, just a calzone.
I think that they were just trying to, like, I think it's the exact same thing.
Okay.
But I think they're trying to rename it so that, because calzones aren't as popular, so if they made their own thing.
Okay, so when I was in Rome, I had a calzone, and I was thinking, oh, this will be better because it's just smaller. I don't need a huge pizza. Dumb, because, kind of like a Reese's cup, there has to be the right ratio. And so a pizza, the reason why the ratio is right and a calzone, the ratio is wrong, there's too much crust in a calzone. Deep dish, Chicago-style pizza, all the crust. Perfection. However, I don't like calzone. It's too dry for me.
Yeah, I don't think there's enough sauce in calzones either. This isn't what we're talking about or anything, but there's not, you like have to dip it, like drown it in sauce, like, almost like it's a, almost like it's a big cheese stick kind of thing, you know? Yeah. Like there's a, I think there's a little bit of sauce inside, but I don't know. Yeah. Anyways, mine would be spaghetti. I would love to just pull out like some spaghetti out of my pocket and just like dangle it and drop it in the mouth.
It's no wonder we like to go to Italy in our family.
I love spaghetti. There's been multiple times that there's this one restaurant in Rogers. Again, not a sponsor, Johnny Carino's. I got it off DoorDash one time and it was so good. And now I've had it not like once a week, but I've had it multiple times over at Abby's parents' house, and I'll be like, I got the Carino's, and it's so funny because they've been there and they're like, it's not that good, but their pasta is really good, just their spaghetti. I don't know if anything else. I never see anyone else in the restaurant when I go pick it up. It's like always dead, so I don't know how they're still open. And Abby's mom is surprised that it's still open, but for now it's really good. So just some Johnny Carino's pulling it out of my pocket, you know.
I sometimes wonder if we should go and like get these sponsored episodes after we like have a thing that we really like. That'd be funny. It'd be hilarious if you went and like, look, we featured you in this podcast and I think you should give me this spaghetti for the next 3 months. Oh dear. Sammy's back to from maternity leave editing. Who knows if this will even make it in the final podcast.
Yeah, I was just about to say another fun little behind the scenes for all the listeners is right before this, we said, all right, this question won't take 5 or 6 minutes.
Oh, goodness gracious. Okay.
It's taking even more than that. But to move on to what we're actually talking about today, it does not have to do with pizza or pasta or foods in your pocket. It is the motivational triad. Because I totally know what that is. So the motivational triad has three parts. Let's talk about each of them separately.
Wait.
I'm just kidding. Sorry. I was taking Angela's line on purpose to make her laugh. Okay. You can tell us what we're talking about today because you didn't actually say enough for me to steal all of your lines. So
that's funny. Because the script, you're scripted. It says, what are we talking about today? But no, that's totally fine. What is the question?
So what are we talking about today? What is the motivational triad? Just so you guys know, our script is basically just like some notes, just like you do when you're doing a little speech kind of thing. You know what I mean? And so we have some points that we try to hit. And then I ask the questions that aren't in there because Angela never knows what I'm thinking. So she's going to tell us what we're talking about. And then I'm going to ask the questions like normal.
Yeah. So the motivational triad is, well, first let me set this up with the fact that what we are going to be doing over the next couple of months is really just unpacking the new book that is coming out soon. My new book, not the new book, my new book that's coming out soon. And we can talk about title later, but anyway, so chapter 2 is about the motivational triad. So this is really talking about how our brain works and the natural wirings that we have that are designed that help our brain just survive. It is, I think it could also be called like your survival instincts. These are kind of three categories of things that help you survive. And not just you, but it seems to be wired in to our entire species. And so it's interesting to explore this idea because there's literally some things that we do that may not make sense unless you kind of put on the glasses and look at the world through the idea of the motivational triad. So,
all that being said, do you want to tell me what the motivational triad is?
Yeah. So the first, well, I was like, am I going to tell you all three? I'm afraid that I will go off on the tangent. So I'm going to start.
You can start this however we want, but
yeah, no.
Hey, you told me, you said, what are we talking about today?
Yeah. So I'm going to bring them out because I know me and I will like go off on if I talk about them all three. Okay. Well, no, tell them what you're going to tell them. Tell them what you told them and then tell them what you told them. Right. So
I don't know what you're talking about, but how about you just say all three and then we'll talk about each one individually.
Sorry. It's a technique in public speaking that you're supposed to let your listeners know where we're going. And then you take them on the journey and then you review and tell them where you've been. So the three are avoid pain, avoid pain, seek pleasure, and be efficient or conserve energy is kind of another way to talk about that.
Wait, so you said avoid pain.
Avoid pain.
Be efficient.
Seek pleasure.
Oh, seek pleasure. Be efficient.
Yeah. Conserve energy.
Okay. I think I'm going to let you talk about the first one before I ask any questions because I have a question already, but it's like, I think it's better for later, probably.
Okay. You're welcome to like type in the question so you don't forget it.
Well, here, I'll just ask it and you can tell me if you're going to answer it. All right. So okay. What I was going to ask is like, I mean, so is this the motivation, like what we're talking about, is this something that like everyone should have? Is this that something that everyone like does have and does do without noticing? Is it a better way to motivate yourself? Like,
what's that's a really good question.
Basis for it. Yeah.
That's a fantastic question.
Are you going to answer it later or are you good for right now? Okay.
No, that's a great question right now. I believe, and research bears it out, that this is something that is wired into all humans. It is part of our design. And so often people will use a metaphor talking about like from caveman times or, you know, back in ancient times and to really kind of show where this is. And even in my book, I use some examples from like our, you know, our ancestors when we are, you know, fighting for our lives because there's not adequate food. You know, if you think back in BC times, then you know that food was not always readily available. And so people would have to go and hunt and gather and look for food. And if we weren't motivated to avoid pain, then we would not have continued to survive as a species. If we weren't motivated to seek pleasure, then we wouldn't have been continued as a species. And then we'll talk a little bit more about conserving energy and how that helps us survive as humankind. So I think it is the way I believe and the research that I've done, which not that I do research, but just I read everybody else's research, is that this is wired up into us as humans.
Is there, and we might get into this even later when we talk about the morning show, is there ones that are more important or common?
Yeah, so we will get into that in a little bit later.
Okay, then how about you talk about, go ahead and get started talking about avoiding pain. I think it seems pretty straightforward, but I bet there's more to it than just that.
Yeah, it does seem straightforward at first glance, like, oh yeah, I don't want to avoid pain. But I think that it's important for us to think about why avoiding pain is key to survival, because our brain thinks at a very primitive level that pain leads to death. And so if we, you know, if you get into a fight with a, you know, an animal, a wild animal that's a predator that is trying to kill you, pain could be detrimental. You could die. Right. And so when if at the very, very core of our being, we think pain equals death, then we should avoid it at all cost. Now, the tricky part is that in our modern society, most of us aren't walking around like fighting, you know, saber-toothed tigers. Right. So the thing that I think is really interesting about the avoiding pain is that because of that primitive part of our brain, then avoiding pain can also like be translated not just physical pain, but emotional pain, mental anguish. And it begins to explain why things like rejection and disappointment and things that where we don't feel accepted by other people feel like they're the worst possible thing. Right. So if your brain thinks, if I am in pain, and pain could be rejection or judgment, it literally feels like if you take a risk and people laugh at you, it feels like at a very primitive unconscious level that you could die. I believe this is why fear of public speaking is so terrifying for people, or is such a prevalent fear, is because, oh my gosh, I'm going to put myself out there and I'm going to be on display and people are going to, could reject me, which could be very painful, which could equals death. And in some ways it does feel like social death. It feels like you have been, like if you're excluded from, you know, your group, when, if you've got to fight a saber-toothed tiger, fighting it in a group of, or your community is easier, right? You want to stick together. But if you're excommunicated from your group, you know, and a lot of times in this language, people will say your tribe, and I'm trying really hard to like be careful about, I don't want to use the word tribe because I think it's culturally insensitive to our native folks. So your community and your group, when you don't have that sense of belonging, then it really can be translated in your brain to this could lead to death, which is not true, right? We know that like logically, when we're conscious about it, we're like, that's not really true. That's dumb that we think that. Well, yeah, it may seem dumb that we think that. However, if you're aware of that, then you can combat that. And we'll talk about that in a little bit.
You know, you completely lost me whenever we started talking about saber-toothed tigers, because those are extinct. So I don't know what you said after you said saber-toothed tiger. No, I'm just kidding. I think that was pretty well said, and I think it explains it well.
Every now and again, I wish we were in the same room, because
yeah, I know, like, you do.
Smack you.
Yeah, I can tell. I can see it in your eyes. So the next one, seeking pleasure. I don't really have any questions about the avoiding pain one. Like I said, I think you explained things well. Excellent. And it makes sense. So next is seeking pleasure.
Seek pleasure. This one, I like, as I dug into this to really, first of all, I think that if people explain things well, often it's because they understand it really well. And so for this particular idea of like how our brain works, and how our nervous system works, I've really spent the last year and a half just really digging in. So one of the things about seeking pleasure that I just really wasn't aware of is that there's kind of four primary groupings of that seek pleasure, at least that I talk about a lot. So seeking pleasure is food. We need food to survive. So, and we find food pleasurable. We could talk about food in relation to avoiding pain, because there's literal hunger pain. And so, and if you starve to death, so food could fall into all three of these categories, but specifically people mostly talk about food, reproduction, literally sex, comfort, and belonging to a group. And so when you take this to the idea of survival of the species, then it makes sense that sex is pleasurable, because we need us to procreate. The humanity needs to, like, it's kind of one of the earliest commands in the Bible, right? Be fruitful and multiply. And so when we have food, reproduction, and we belong to a group, then it feels so much better. Like when you have a sense of belonging, it feels really good. And you want to continue to feel really good about being part of a group. And so like we talked about with the avoiding pain, being part of a group, it feels pleasurable because it's safe. When you're part of a group, then that creates safety within you. And so thinking of this seeking pleasure as motivation, then it explains, like, it would have been hard to, like, go out and, like, have to kill everything you ate. I mean, if you even think about, like, the settlers in, you know, in America, going out and having to, like, constantly find food and look for things, then they did that to try to fill their needs and also to take care of their community. You know, I've been diagnosed with ADD. Now I guess it's called ADHD. Anyway, and I say, well, if I was in Zimbabwe, I would be a revered member of the group because I scan the horizon looking for threats and looking for food. And so I would be, I'm really good at finding pleasure. Now here's where the thing goes in modern times, it's not that hard to find food, right? Like most people on the planet have access, or at least most people in, you know, industrialized countries can just walk across the room. We've talked about on here that I lived in a way growing up that I didn't always have access to food, but most of us, most people do have access to some food. And so it feels to me like our seek pleasure can sometimes get stuck open so that we want to have pleasure by eating what we want, drinking what we want, watching TV for hours on end. And so seek pleasure and avoid pain, both of them can be to your benefit and can be to your detriment.
So the third point of the motivational triad is being efficient or conserving energy. So you want to talk about that now?
Yeah. So this is the part of our brain that just wants to things to be easy. If you are out looking for food, then you want to find as much food as you can in the least amount of energy so that you can not use up that energy. You know, I can walk across the room right now and I can consume 2000 calories very easily. But if I had to go out and like hunt for a deer and, you know, search for wild berries, then I don't want to waste my energy. I'm not going to be out going to the gym because I'm going to use up as much energy as I need going and finding the food that I need, right? So as a natural survival, if we conserve energy, then we have the energy available to us that we have to fight wild animals. Now, modern times, we don't have wild animals that most of us are fighting, right? Those wild animals that we're fighting are like the jerk in the meeting at work. And yet our brain still wants us to conserve energy and wants us to be efficient. And so what we do, how we do that in modern times is we sometimes aren't very motivated. We have to like some of us have to like make ourselves like do an exercise routine, right? Is because our natural inclination is to like conserve the energy. The other thing is where we expend a lot of energy is when we're learning new things and we have to be super consciously aware of how to do things. So think about when you learned how to drive, like you put your hands in the right wheel, you were looking constantly, you were checking the mirrors and checking the speedometer and checking. And you were like, you couldn't do anything else except drive. That took a lot of energy. Your brain doesn't like that when you use up all that energy because it would like to be doing stuff very unconsciously. So your brain actually, when it learns how to do something, it wants to put it on autopilot. So as much as it can, your brain wants to put it on autopilot. So if you have a problem, you solve the problem. Even if the solution isn't that effective, it just puts it on autopilot, right? So somebody yells at you for something and to get them to stop yelling at you, you clean the kitchen, take out the trash and mop the floors. Well, the next time they're yelling at you, you go back and start cleaning the kitchen, mopping the floors, taking out the trash. And it's like, why do you, every time I get upset, why do you clean? Well, it's because your brain is trying to be efficient. And it's like, well, this worked once, so I'm going to keep doing it and doing it and doing it. And so it's a recipe for us ending up living very unconscious lives and not being very intentional. And what fights our brain fights us on being intentional because it wants to be efficient and conserve energy.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. So it seems like that multiple times these could kind of come in contradiction with each other, which I think you kind of alluded to a little bit, but like overeating can cause pain because it can make you out of overweight, and it can make other things harder. It can cause physical pain or mental pain with maybe how you look, but also overeating, like you really like eating is pleasurable. And it's probably part of saving energy because it might give you more energy, at least your body might think that. And so same thing with like watching Netflix, you know, it's being lazy and not being efficient, but it is pleasurable. And so what would you kind of say to that?
You are absolutely right, because your unconscious, like sort of natural wiring, prioritizes short term over long term. And so that means like what is right in front of you is going to be which one of those three is it going to quickly meet your need? And so you're right, like overeating or over drinking is very pleasurable in the moment. And when we're in conserve energy and working very unconsciously, then we just do the thing that is easy, because that's what our brain wants, is the easy button. And we forget in that moment, we forget the long-term implications. We forget that we are going to be overweight. We forget that we don't like how our clothes fit. We forget that we're going to feel hungover the next day, or we forget that we really would feel better about ourselves if we went ahead and tidied up around our house instead of watching Netflix. And so the trick to kind of hacking this motivational, one of the tricks, we'll talk about a couple of them, but one of them is to you have to become very conscious. Just like when you started driving and you had to think about how to drive, and now you don't have to think about how to drive. When you're starting this, trying to like overcome your natural inclination, you have to think about it. And I have literally, I remember when I was on my weight loss journey and I was probably like 3 weeks in. So I was just finally getting the hang of it. And somebody brought in pedophores to work, and pedophores are like my kryptonite. Like I love them. Pizza and pedophores, I'm good for the rest of my life. They brought in pedophores, and I literally had to say that pedophore will not taste as good as, I said my weight out loud, the weight that I was going for. That pedophore will not taste as good as the scale saying X pounds, you know? And so I had to like, and the cool thing was, is that like, I was miserable for 3 whole minutes. And as long as I could like hang in there for 3 minutes, then I could just be like, oh. And then after that, when I got over the misery of missing out, then I was like, I actually did feel a lot of pleasure. And I was so proud of myself for like making that conscious choice. So I got the pleasure in the short term by being a little more conscious. Now, then contrast that with when I was, you know, going to Europe, and I like, nope, I don't care what the scale weighs. I am going to enjoy. I love food. There's certain types of drinks that I love, interesting drinks to taste. And so I had really cool wine and really cool mixed drinks while I was on the cruise. And then last night I went to a party. I drank water the whole time because I am consciously aware that on a regular basis, I want to maintain this ideal weight. So I pick and choose very consciously to override those kind of natural inclinations.
Seems like this would tie kind of hand in hand with goal setting. So how would you apply goal setting with all of this?
Yeah. So before we get into the goal setting, I want to kind of talk about like each of us has kind of a natural, I have found, and there's some different schools of thought on this, that there are most of us lean one way or another. So most of us are either the type of people who like to avoid pain, or we're the type of people we more often like to seek pleasure. Not that we never use the other one, but there's just one of them that's a little stronger for us than the other. And so, for instance, on the avoiding pain, my husband, Barry, we've talked about him a lot. He is much more of a pain avoider. And so for him, when we were on the weight loss journey, he had to think about like those jeans that he was, when he went to put his jeans on in October, and he didn't, and he had to buy the size bigger than he ever wanted to have to buy. And that was very painful for him. And so he set the goal to never have to be in that size jeans again. And so for him, like even how he maintains goals and sets goals, it really is about how can I avoid pain in the future is the way that he gets there. I lean more towards seek pleasure. What I'm discovering is that there are people in my life that are like, I'm not really a goal setter. And I am seeing that people, this is what I think, it's just totally hypothesis at this point. There's nothing scientific about this. But what I'm seeing is that people that tell me I'm not really a goal setter are often more pain avoiders. And I'm more of a seek pleasure. And so I imagine a future that is different than what I have, whether it is a trip I want to take, whether it is a revenue goal that I have, whether it is, you know, writing a book. There is a lot of pain. There's not a lot of pleasure in the process of it. And it is not very efficient, I can just tell you. And so obviously people write books in way faster than a year and a half that's taken me. But I imagine what I'm going to feel like when I publish that book, when I hold the book. And so for me, goal setting, I lean into my natural inclination of seeking pleasure and use that so that I think about, what am I going to look like at my ideal body weight? What size clothes am I going to wear? What are the benefits? So I'm more likely to talk about my goals in a way that is, that feels pleasurable. Like there's a happy ending for me when I get to my goal. Whereas people that lean a little more toward avoid pain are more likely to like, oh, well, I don't want to end up with high blood pressure and heart disease. And maybe they don't even set goals about their weight until they get to like the pain of a doctor telling them, okay, you have a medical condition and you have to lose weight. And so I think that you can use it. That's how it kind of plays into goal setting.
Which one do you think I am?
Oh, I think you're 100% seek pleasure. Not 100%, obviously. I think you lean more towards seek pleasure. What do you think?
I would say that too, but I had to start questioning because I was like, I don't see myself as that much of a goal setter. Like a little bit, really? But like, you think I am?
Oh, I do. I'll give you a couple of examples. Like when you decided that you wanted to go to New Zealand, so you were going with a person who had been planning for years to take a gap year in New Zealand. You decided in March you're going to leave in October. And I think by the middle of April, you knew how to get a work permit. You knew how much it was going to cost you to stay. You had an estimate of what the food costs were, and you knew how many hours. You even went out and got another job. You got a job stocking shelves at Walmart so that you could put all of that money, that extra money, toward going to New Zealand. When you decided that you want to ask Abby to marry you, you said, this is what I have to do. Here is my future that I am going to achieve. And you worked very diligently all summer long, saving up your money. And you knew exactly what you needed to do so that you could get the thing you wanted. You wanted to go to disc golf. You know that means that every morning you, or maybe not now, but for a long time, every morning you got up and for 30 minutes, you went and shot your disc golf. You know, you worked on putting. So I absolutely think that you are big time into pleasure.
I feel like I'm more of a planner though. I feel like all of what you just said is more planning. Now, not the disc golf one. That one would be more reaching towards a goal. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, going to New Zealand, I guess you could say it was a goal, but I feel like all that was just more planning than goal setting, which maybe is the same thing. I don't know. But the main reason I think that is because I'm not saying this is the only way to set goals, but I don't have a spot in where I have a bunch of goals written down. I don't have, like, I want to do this with disc golf, or I want to do this with work life, or I want to do this, you know what I mean? I have some ideas of like, yeah, like I would like to do that. And I do take steps towards those, but it's more of like a broad thing than I see most goal setting. So that's why.
Well, and I think that's a factor of your age, you know, that you are, I think as you progress in life, and it'll be, like, you're already talking about how do I buy a house? Like, so you may not have as concrete smart goals, like I'm going to give it a time and all of those things. It could be though, that once you discover to do that, that you are actually like, oh wow, this is even more pleasurable for me because you like to accomplish things. So anyways,
okay, so you have a question written down that you want to touch on. And it says, it's called a motivational triad. Is there a way to hack the system? Which I'm going to guess that means you do have a way to maybe not hack the system, but assist people in this. So how much you share that?
Yeah. So one of the things that I have, and it's kind of related to what we're talking about with goal setting, is that I have a theory, and it's still pretty embryonic in the theory, but I think that when we set our goals, if we know that we're more of a pain avoidance than we are a seek pleasure, I think we can actually use it to help us in how we frame our goals. And so what I mean by that is, like, if you are the kind of person who it leans more toward avoiding pain, then perhaps maybe if you recognize that and you read all these goal setting books that say, imagine a future self and imagine what you'll be like and all of these things, and they don't resonate with you, then perhaps maybe you're like, I really don't ever want to wear those pants. And instead of having, you know, one of the techniques in weight loss is like to hang up the size pants that you want to get to. That's a very effective technique for seeking pleasure, like setting those pants or that dress or whatever in your closet so you see it all the time, what you want to look like. Maybe if you were at a younger point, you were at a smaller size and you set that and that's your goal because you're a seek pleasure kind of person. But if you're a pain avoider, it might be effective for you to hang up the fat clothes where you can see them. And when you are tempted to, and I am not saying you're fat. I'm just saying that we, especially women, we have, like, you know, our pants that we wore when we were at a size that we did not like. Whatever that is for you, no judgment for me, but I want you to avoid pain at your decision. Seek pleasure at your decision, not what everybody else says about you, not what society says about you, but whatever it is that you don't want. Let's say that you do start and you have those pair of pants that was like, oh my gosh, it was so painful to buy it in that size because I had really let my weight get out of control. And I know I'm just using a weight analogy, it's just so visual. Then I hang up those pants and go, I don't ever want to be back there. And then when you are sitting at dinner and the dessert menu comes by, or they ask you if you want another drink, then you go, I do not want to get to those pants. So I'm going to use that as my motivation. And so it could be that you just figure out what it is you don't want and remind yourself of what you don't want. I have family members that died early in their retirement years because they didn't ever take care of themselves. Sometimes I will think of them when I'm trying to get control of my anger and my emotions. I think of how many people in my family have passed away from medical issues and not taking care of their body. So that's a pain avoider. It's actually not that motivating, even though I do think about it from time to time.
It seems like in this last little bit of us talking, you really skipped out on the conserving energy / being efficient in terms of the goal setting. So does that matter with goal setting, or is that almost a separate thing that it is part of the triad where it's just more different?
Yeah, no, thank you for bringing that up, because the conserve energy part of it is when you can automate any part of it. And so that is like creating good habits, setting those yourself up for success. Things that are be efficient, conserve energy is like go through your pantry and get rid of anything in your pantry that is not going to lead you to your goals, because then your conserve energy and be efficient is like, I'm not going to drive to the store to buy Oreos, but if they're in the cabinet, it's very efficient. And so use that function to really figure out what you can put automated. So I have the same shake every morning. I wake up. This is how my routine is. And so I schedule my routine. We don't love to make decisions. Our brain has a max capacity of making decisions. And so anything you can do to take it out of the constant decision-making, then, and that could be for a while, like you only go to certain restaurants because you know they have a good salad. It could be that you kind of don't do the things that cause you to drink too much, if that's your goal. Or if you're trying to not do Netflix, then I have found that if I, like right after dinner, if I go ahead and make dinner or clean up the kitchen and then go for a walk, then it sets me. And so setting those habits can really utilize that conserve energy.
Yeah, I think that definitely makes sense. You know, they say that if you make all of your decisions in the morning, then the rest of your day, you're not going to be able to do anything. So it makes sense to try to get rid of that decision-making.
Yeah.
I think that is all we have for today, though. So thanks for sharing about the Motivational Triad on episode 40 of the Be Freaking Awesome podcast. There has been a slight delay in the release of the book, so it won't be coming out next week like we hoped, but it will be coming out soon. So keep on listening and for more information about that. And also send us your questions to podcast@thebelfordgroup. We'd love to do a mailbag episode where we answer a bunch of goofy questions that you guys send in, like ones we do at the beginning, or questions about any of the podcasts that you've listened to. If you have any of those, then we would love to discuss those. So send it to podcast@thebelfordgroup.com. .com. Yeah, sorry. .com. Yeah, if you don't have the .com, then it won't do anything.
You can also go on Instagram and you can send me a direct message. And don't forget, you can download Be Freaking Awesome at angelabelford.com.
That's right. So thank you for listening to the Be Freaking Awesome podcast. And we'll catch you next week.
Wait a second. Go ahead, ask the question.
I don't know how to say what I want to say.
Well, we're first going to talk about avoiding pain, so. I'm sorry, because now when I'm like, you're like, are you going to answer it later or send a question now? I'm like, wait, is she going to cut all that crap out? Or should
answer it later part was like, because I said you might answer it later, but I'll ask it now. I don't know if she'll cut that out. She'll figure it out. I believe in you, Sammy.